Thank you very much. Konnichiwa. I'd like to thank the Tokyo University of Foreign Studies and Peace and Conflict Studies for the opportunity to come here to Japan to attend the conference and to speak with you. It's a great honor. Today I'll talk to you briefly about sustainable security. And looking at the title of this first session, it came to mind that there may be two important questions which I could talk about. The first one deals with what would be an appropriate security strategy for the 21st century. The second question, how would it differ from today's dominant approach to security? An appropriate security strategy would have four objectives. First, it would address imminent threats and respond to crises. It would identify and respond to trends and changes in the international security environment. It would strengthen trends and institutions that sustain peace and security. And finally, it would strengthen trust, which is the main currency of security and cooperation. And looking at global threats for the 21st century, the most important challenges to international peace and security come in the form of the trends containing the causes of global and regional insecurity and conflict. Future security concerns need to be placed in a broad perspective, which take into account the economic, health, environmental, and other long-term threats to human survival and well-being. A group we work with at Bradford in the United Kingdom is the Oxford Research Group, and they have identified the most important, or four most important, interconnected trends. These are climate change, conflict over natural resources, marginalization of the majority of the people in the world, and global militarization. Future insecurity will arise from four main groups of factors: the adverse effects of climate change and global warming, competition over increasingly scarce resources, especially oil and water, increasing socioeconomic divisions and the marginalization of the majority of the people of the world, and finally, increased use of military force and the further spread of military technologies. Looking at the first one, at climate change, while it may not be a direct cause of violent conflict, it will contribute to the risk of internal and interstate conflict and exacerbate existing tensions. The effects of climate change are likely to lead to the displacement of peoples from island, coastline, and river delta areas, severe natural disasters and changing weather patterns, and increasing food shortages. And while the rich may be able to adapt to this, the poor will not be able to adapt, especially looking at the three impacts which have recently been identified, which is looking at increasing in the severity of tropical storms, impact of rising sea levels, and the drying out of tropical and subtropical regions where rainfall is going to be moving to polar areas into the oceans and away from these other regions. That has a direct impact on food security in Asia and across the world. Climate change has long-term security implications for all countries of the world, which is far more serious, lasting, and destructive than those of international terrorism, for example. However, the response to climate change should not be the greater use of nuclear power, which would only encourage the spread of technology and materials that could be used in the development of nuclear weapons and their use by rogue states or terrorist networks. Instead, a more secure and reliable response is the development of local, renewable energy resources and radical energy conservation practices. In the United Kingdom, where I'm currently living, the estimate now is that the United Kingdom has to reduce consumption of energy by 80% by 2050. The second area is competition over natural resources. Industrialized and industrializing states are increasingly dependent on imported resources, especially oil, natural gas, and water. Oil is currently the main marketed fossil fuel, and the Persian Gulf is the dominant region with two-thirds of the world's resources. The Persian Gulf, however, is a deeply unstable region with continuing potential conflict as the United States and other countries seek to maintain control against opposition from regional state and sub-state paramilitary groups. The long-term concern over trends in oil supplies and peaks, which is summed up quite a bit in the peak oil debates, is important, along with the growing role of China China's now not able to produce all of its domestic oil needs, and so it's importing oil. Oil consumption is the primary cause of climate change and should be rapidly reduced for this reason alone. Competition over oil supplies means that the Middle East experiences deep instability and conflict. This situation could be eased if dependence on oil could be diminished and a change to renewable energy sources was brought about. Water is a source of security and prosperity, and with water shortages likely to increase, affecting food production, growing populations, urbanization, some tensions could develop into violent conflict unless we follow a multilateral approach to cooperative water management agreements. The third area is marginalization of the majority world. This is a clear and present danger in the world today. It involves a complex interplay of discrimination, global poverty, third world debt, infectious disease, global inequality, and deepening socioeconomic divisions, which taken together make up key elements of global insecurity for most people in the world. While overall global wealth has increased, the benefits of this economic growth have not been equally shared, with a heavy concentration of growth in relatively few parts of the world. It's something like the richest 10% of the world own 85% of household wealth, while the bottom 50% of the world's people own 1% of global household wealth. What this means is that 88% of global household wealth is in the hands of about 1 million people, the haves, who live in North America, in Europe, in Japan, Taiwan, Singapore, Australia, and New Zealand, as opposed to the 5.5 billion people who do not have wealth, who live in sub-Saharan Africa, parts of the Middle East, South Asia, and parts of the former Soviet Union. You also see tension and conflict as wealth is concentrated in minority elites in growing emerging countries like India, China, and Brazil. These divisions are being exacerbated by increasing oppression and political exclusion, coupled with a growing sense of marginalization as a result of improvements in education, modern communication technologies, and literacy, leading in places to an increase in violence and political violence. What we're seeing has been termed as a revolution of frustrated expectations as people are becoming aware of their relative poverty to other groups. Current security policies and the war on terror are not reacting appropriately to this key trend and are actually increasing support for radical and violent movements such as the Al-Qaeda network. Policies to control such developments will need to go beyond traditional methods of counterterrorism to incorporate a wide range of conflict prevention, management, and resolution methods. They will also need to go beyond these to include determined efforts to address the underlying global socioeconomic divisions that the world is currently experiencing. The fourth area is militarization. The first 6 years of the war on terror shows that the current approach of maintaining international security by the vigorous use of military force, combined with the continuing development of new nuclear and conventional weapon systems, is failing. The Cold War shows us that there is a persistent tendency by the authorities in countries and governments to maintain an aura of control and responsibility when this is very far from what is happening. Post-Cold War nuclear developments involve the modernization and proliferation of new nuclear systems and an increasing risk of limited nuclear weapons use in warfare. When I was arriving here into Tokyo on Tuesday and Wednesday, the leading article in the Manchester Guardian was about a group of American and NATO generals who have retired putting together a letter to NATO and the United States saying that the preemptive use of first use of nuclear weapons has to be supported and maintained in NATO and in the West because of threats to our way of living. Biological weapons have a potential to become effective weapons of war given likely developments in genetic manipulation and biotechnology. We've witnessed in the last few years the failure to strengthen the Biological and Toxic Weapons Convention. Strengthening this convention should be a priority. These dangerous trends will be exacerbated by the development of directed energy weapons, such as laser systems, as well as the race towards the weaponization of space. To date, the international community has followed a security strategy which is preoccupied with maintaining key elements of the status quo and controlling pressures for change. This approach to security is called the control paradigm because it seeks to keep threats to the status quo under control. Given the extent to which the United States influences the international security agenda, the control paradigm will continue to define security and defense policies across much of the world. One of the major problems with this approach, of course, is securitization, where every issue, every problem is seen through the very narrow lens of military security. When that's coupled with the linkages towards commercialization and privatization of security, we're seeing the situation now with Blackwater and some of these big private military companies that are conducting wars and carrying out what used to be government responsibilities without any accountability for their actions. American national security strategy aims to maintain the status quo of military, economic, and political advantages enjoyed by the U.S. We see this in the project of the New American Century under the title of Pax Americana from the 60s, and also a current term has been the benign hegemony of the United States. And the goals are, of course, to control access to fossil fuels, to maintain global military supremacy, to protect U.S. domination of international financial institutions, and the military political advantage enjoyed by its key regional allies. This perspective puts forward the following responses to global threats. Under competition over resources, we see an obsession with national energy security through the control of key areas which lead to further conflict and tension in regions. Climate change. You have an unshakable and unrealistic belief in the capacity of technological advances operating in free markets as the primary means of responding to the myth of climate change. Under marginalization of the majority world, the problems of poverty and socioeconomic divisions are largely ignored. Immediate threats to the homeland are met with heavy social control to keep the lid on civil discontent, and belief that the free market will enable people to work their way out of poverty. Under terrorism, you see it follows a series of counterproductive, controversial, and often illegal counterterrorism measures and attacks on civil liberties. Indefinite detention of suspects without trial, extraordinary renditions to countries that condone torture, and the direct use of torture itself. Under militarization, you have counterproliferation. Measures focus on preventing weapons of mass destruction material from being acquired by terrorist groups or rogue states, and where actors do desire or possess such capability, a strategy of preemptive military strikes is deemed as the best course of action. This approach of attempting to maintain the status quo through military means and keeping the lid on insecurity without addressing the root causes of insecurity will not work in the long term, and in fact is already failing in the face of increased paramilitary action and asymmetrical warfare. The current approach to security is deeply flawed and is distracting the world's political elites from developing realistic and sustainable solutions to the non-traditional threats facing the world, amongst which terrorism is by no means the greatest or the most serious. This slide lists just some of the ways that this control paradigm is failing, whether it's the lack of democracy and peace in the Middle East, the significant support worldwide for radical Islamic terrorism, increasing in the number of terrorist attacks since September 2001. It's something like a six-fold increase in the number of attacks in the 5 years after 2001 to the 5 years before 2001. Homegrown radical Islamic terrorism is a problem in Europe and elsewhere. Competition over energy supplies. The 2006 Israeli war with Hezbollah in Lebanon exposed the limits of Israeli power. Strategic competitors to the U.S. dominance are emerging around the world. Iran and North Korea remain emboldened regional powers. Iraq is in a state of bloody chaos. The Taliban are reemerging as a powerful force in Afghanistan. There was an estimate in January that the Taliban will be in Kabul this year. I'm scheduled to go there in February. I hope they delay it a bit for into the summer. The price of oil remains volatile and increases with each crisis. U.S. influence is waning in Africa and the Middle East. The U.S. is increasingly viewed as a threat to world peace, and Western countries seem to be entering a recession. Sustainable security is an alternative approach that would begin by reassessing global threats, instead of focusing almost exclusively on countering immediate threats, it would also attend to the long-term drivers of insecurity and conflict. It would be based on a more appropriate balance between countering and defending against imminent threats and tackling the root causes and trends of conflict and insecurity, and it would deliver the most effective means for achieving both of these ends. Today's dominant approach to security focuses almost exclusively on the former, with little consideration to how foreign and security policies impact over time on the latter. A sustainable security strategy is a more effective approach because it's based on cooperative means and long-term planning to tackle imminent threats alongside the root causes of conflict and insecurity. Unless the root causes are addressed, our only option is to try to control the results. Since 2001, most international actors have focused on international terrorism as the greatest threat to world security, despite the fact that the evidence does not support this claim. In an increasingly integrated world, it is unrealistic to believe that the U.S.-led political elite can rely on military measures and the prism of the war on terror to keep global threats at bay for much longer. And looking at a sustainable security strategy, it would provide the following responses to the five threats we've been talking about. Under competition over resources, it would involve comprehensive energy efficiency, recycling, resource conservation and management policies and practices, large-scale funding of renewable alternatives to oil, and one of the key areas of this, of course, is a reduction in consumption. Under climate change, it would look at introduction of a carbon tax and rapid replacement of carbon-based energy sources by diversified local renewable sources as the primary basis for future energy generation. Under marginalization, reform of global systems of trade, aid, and debt relief in order to make poverty reduction a world priority. Under terrorism, addressing the legitimate political grievances and aspirations of marginalized groups, coupled with intelligence-led counterterrorism police operations against violent revolutionary groups and dialogue with terrorist leadership whenever possible. Under militarization, alongside non-proliferation measures, which of course are very different from counter-proliferation measures, states with nuclear weapons must take bold, visible, and substantial steps towards disarmament, at the same time as halting initiatives such as the development of new nuclear and bioweapons. Together, these elements constitute a new approach to security. The main difference between sustainable security and current strategies is that this approach does not attempt to control threats unilaterally through the use of force, but rather it aims to resolve cooperatively the root causes of those threats using the most effective means available. In this way, a sustainable approach is inherently preventable in that it addresses the likely causes of conflict and instability well before the ill effects are felt. Rather than waiting until a crisis is underway and then attempting to control the situation, at which point it's often too late. This next table, if you can read it, is just trying to give a comparison of the different responses from the two paradigms, from the two models, to how they deal with the global threats rich in the middle. I won't go through the list and read it. I think it's fairly clear. Over the next decade, a radical shift towards sustainable approaches to security will be hugely important. If there is no change in thinking, security policies will continue to be based on the mistaken assumption that the status quo can be maintained, that an elite minority can maintain its position, that environmental problems can be marginalized, and that the lid can be kept on dissent and insecurity. In this scenario, little attempt will be made to address the core causes of insecurity, even if the failure to do so threatens the elite minority as well as the marginalized majority. Alternatively, a change in thinking could lead to an era of substantial progress in developing a more socially just and environmentally sustainable world order. Thank you.